Kathy McGill is a GP with a special interest in weight management. Dr. McGill is the latest to share her thoughts in the New Zealand Doctor podcast series, Primary Thinking. We caught up with her just before moving to Brisbane, where she hopes to do more research on weight management. First, we began by asking why there should be more GPs with special interest here in New Zealand.
Well, yes, I mean, it's hard to do everything, but I think we should have a lot more GP specialists because you're still grounded in seeing all sorts of different people, but then you specialise in a certain area. We need to take some of the pressure away from the specialists in hospitals. We bring it back into the community. There's a lot that can be done in primary care without having to go into the hospitals. I'm absolutely sure, yes, you need top specialists for brain surgery and things like that, but I think we could make a lot more use. And I have, you know, felt for a long time been trying to talk to the general practice college, because it makes me feel like I'm a bit of an orphan, because I have to be registered with the general practice college, but they're not very keen if I don't do all the general practice. And I mean, it's a bit silly expecting me to be really good at doing, you know, everything, and I've got this really important specialty which other GPs are referring, you know, me to. And I mean, I think even general practitioners now find it's quite a load to really be a good general practitioner who can do everything. You end up knowing less and less about more and more areas, and you get spread very thin. I mean, there are heaps of us. I've got colleagues who do general practice and aged care, and they go to the rest homes, and they're very good at that. And then others who are really specialising in childhood immunisations, and of course there's travel medicine. I mean, there are just so many of them. It's just crazy that there isn't a better acceptance, and trying to expect them all to keep doing house calls. And again, trying to keep GPs interested, they're much better if they're interested in this particular area and supported in that. And as I say, now we're working in these bigger group medical centres, there's heaps of room for us. I mean, we need it. And there are still some who want to be general, and that's absolutely fine. That's great. You know, the ones who really just want to do everything absolutely general, and they're often the rural ones, they do really well because they want to do that.
I've talked to some people before about they're a bit suspicious with GPSIs because there's the potential for patient poaching. Is that a legitimate concern?
It's hard to know, really, because, in fact, you tend to attract the patients who you're good for, and you're good for the ones where you're interested in them and the conditions, okay? So I tended to see the overweight people in the whole practice, and the others just thought that was great. They didn't have to do that. So I think if people are worried about having patients poached for them, then they have to wonder about their own practice and whether somehow or other they're just not servicing enough people, and, you know, they need to look at their own way of working.
What do you think are the most common misconceptions by GPs about weight management?
I think they're the ones that are in society, and that is that it's the individual's fault. That just stops everything dead in its tracks. Do you want to go and see a GP who's going to judge you? No. And are they going to judge you about something that's really serious and personal? Absolutely not. So I have people who say, I don't want you to tell my GP that I'm coming to see you. I mean, that's so sad. You know, their GP should be interested enough, and they should feel open enough to say, oh, look, I'm getting really, you know, really concerned. My weight's just out of control. I don't know what to do. Even if the GP said, oh, well, that's really difficult, isn't it? I can see that you're really struggling. I'm not very good at it myself. I don't know a great deal, but let's see if we can find something to help and see where the real problems are. And that's what I originally did. So I think that really they have to look at the biology and understand it, and then stop the judgment. Because in fact, how can 3% of the population expand to 33% of the population in a few decades? They didn't all become, you know, slothful and gluttonous. Come on, we should not be judging them. It's the environment. Yeah.
How about from the patient's point of view, what are the most common misconceptions by patients about weight management?
Well, it's the same thing. They blame themselves. So once you're feeling totally guilty, and then you get depressed, and it's a vicious cycle, and you go and comfort eat, and round you go, you know. And if you've got the genes which put on lots of weight, then, you know, it can get out of control, which it does. I mean, nobody wants to be overweight. and there's some very strong drivers that are biological and environment, you know, got biology environment interaction. They're very strong, or else we wouldn't be overweight. Nobody wants to be overweight. So, and as soon as you say it's not your fault, then they start, the ears prick up and they say, oh, okay, it's not my fault. But they're quite happy to work, and we both work on together, sort of thing. Mm.
You know? So what's the biggest challenge, like you as a weight management advocate here in New Zealand?
Well, I think it still is that. I mean, I've just given some talks now, and I still had somebody, and she said it in the nicest possible way, and it was about childhood and obesity, and she said, but don't you think those parents are responsible for not letting their children become overweight? And I said, but you've just told me you don't think we should blame adults for it, because they're living in a really really difficult environment. Most of those overweight children have overweight parents. You know, we just need to get this sort of the same message going on here. They can't control their own weight because we have the genes to put on weight. And the dangerous fat around the middle, really the environment that provides so much low quality nutrition, just energy and not other nutrients, it's just poisonous. And we need to really, actually stand up to the big food companies, make the government stand up to the big food companies, and do what we've done with cigarette companies and alcohol companies, stop their advertising directly to us, particularly to our children, and actually properly grade their products. We now have ways of putting a piece of food into a machine and it can spit out all the contents of that food. We could actually grade all our food. We could say, okay, this apple, yes, there's 4,000 useful things in that, so that's a high quality piece of food and that can have a subsidy. And here we've got a sugar drink here and it's got chemicals in it and sugar and water. That's not good nutrients. We'll tax that one. We could actually do that now, you know. But of course, we've got a lot of pressures that say, you know, that whole food doesn't make anyone any money, no patent on it, and you don't get addicted to whole food, you do get addicted to that sugar food. So we really need to actually let the biology come up and not just have the big food companies sit on our food guidelines and things like that in many ways, yeah.
So what is the one policy that you would like to see that would make a dramatic impact on weight management?
Subsidies for whole food and taxes for very refined, high energy, low nutrient food. And as I say, that sounds very radical, but in fact, we can do it. When you've put rules around something, that affects addiction. So if you increase the tax on, say, cigarettes, it says, that's a rule, I can't get round it. Huh. Actually, that's going to mean less money and things. Huh. Okay, I'm going to do something. But when you just leave it as being out there and easy to use and sort of, you know, marketed and things, it's very hard to get over your addiction and do something. But if you actually have a hard rule which says this cigarette packet's going to cost $20, and you suddenly think, oh, that's too much, I'm going to stop. It's amazing how that can actually have an effect on addiction. Yeah.
So what's the biggest barrier for that actually coming into fruition?
Yes, I mean, it is the food companies. They make so much money from our addictions. And, everyone's saying, oh, we're still sort of with that sort of blaming speak. Oh, well, it's the individual's choice. You know, small children can't choose to be addicted or not if the food comes in. And it's just ruining, in fact, whole ethnicities. In fact, we have teenage pregnancies are dropping, and everyone thinks, oh, that's great, our social policies are working. They're dropping because these girls are so fat that they are getting polycystic ovary syndrome and they can't conceive, let alone carry to term pregnancies. That's an awful reason for pregnancy rates dropping, because in fact it should be, if you look evolutionary wise, you know, late teenage, early 20s girls or women, females, that's their best breeding time. Our best breeders can't breed. And this is worse in poor groups. And some ethnicities are generally more poor. So this is a real issue of ethnic survival. And I know that sounds dramatic and and oh my goodness, can't be true. But I just wrote a letter to the BMJ about this because they were saying how their social policies were working, and they published it. And this childhood obesity in any age, it's an illness. The actual fatness is a sign, especially that central fatness, is a sign of severe illness. And we need to get real. It's killing us.
This is Reynald Castaneda for New Zealand Doctor.